Today, what's happening in Ashfield, postcode 2131. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well known as Post, covering finance and problem news. Well, believe it or not, everyone is back, but we're going to do something a bit different this evening. We're going to go through a one-to-one conversation. This is the conversation that I have with individual paying clients, specifically looking at a particular postcode and or suburb. And Edwin has asked me to look at Ashfield. So, Edwin, I want you to play the client, and we'll go through this together if it was a real experience. Any specific questions you'd like me to focus on?
Well, I just want to look at, okay, so what happened is, Dusty and I, we went out fossicking in the backyard and we found a chest full of gold, Martin, of all things gold. So we want to convert that into we feel that it's going to be better in a two-bedroom apartment. The findings, we're looking for a two-bedroom apartment. And we're just going to see how that compares in terms of other areas. Dusty and I chose Ashfield because it is very diverse in terms of house prices, apartments close to the inner west. I mean, it's on the fringes of the inner west, and there's a mix of new and old. So for a little bit more specifics, looking at the three-story walk-up in the area. So that's where we're looking at. We've sold our gold, and now we've got some money on hand, and we want to go out and lay it all on the line at the auctions at Ashfield.
Very good. Okay. And it's quite typical that when normally I have a conversation with a client, and they'll give some specific questions and commentary, and that allows me then to tailor the conversation. So what I then always start by saying is, well, we're looking at, in this case, Ashfield, postcode 2131. That's, of course, in Sydney. And I go on to highlight that this is very much based on the information today. It may change. It's not financial advice. That's the other thing I always say, because, of course, I'm not allowed to provide financial advice. And I'm using the core market model here as the fundamental tool. And for those who've not seen it before, we survey households, we bung those into the model, we take information from all sorts of other sources, and that then gives us a basis of information. And the conversation that we're talking about today is based on that information and analysis. And what I then do is I put together a report, and that report's typically 20 to 30 pages, and we're going to go through that report now. And feel free to throw questions, comments in as we go. As always, Edwin, because I'm sure you will have observations. And just for those who may not be aware of it, so the core market model allows us to look at things like mortgage stress, the trajectory and history of prices, the buying and selling intentions, also data on migration and economics, those things. It goes into the model with some scenarios, and that gives us a sensitivity analysis of prices too. So that's the story. Right, so we're looking at Ashfield. And Ashfield, of course, is interesting. It's in the inner west of Sydney. It covers about 9 kilometres west of Sydney CBD, about 3.4 kilometres. And it's a mix. It's commercial, Liverpool Street, Liverpool Road and Town Centre, residential parks. It's mature inner west, as you say, but it's transitioning. And this is this transitioning thing that we need to understand, right? It's heading towards medium density living. And it's in transformation at the moment, fueled by redevelopment and along the main roads, around its rail node in particular. And there's some changes of planning, of course, which is putting the pressure on high rise in the area. The ABS profiles for Ashfield, it's very diverse. It's got a large share of overseas born residents and multilingual households. And here's a map for those who may not be aware of it. And of course, you can see there that you've got Parramatta Road and Hume Highway, all in the area. And it's there in the centre. Now, it's worth, I think, highlighting the fact, Edwin, that the town centre here has the rail station, frequent bus connections, and therefore it's very much transit. It's underpinned both by residential demand and redevelopment pressure of nearby corridors. Yes, surprising. And so all the talk is about infrastructure, renewing mixed-use buildings, high-density housing supply, and again, close to those transit nodes. Here is the railway station. It's looking pretty flash, but they're going to build around it, and we're going to see a lot of high-rise development in the area. Multiple new apartment projects, smaller redevelopment sites recorded in the property listings and the suburb development notes. And that includes private sector capital investment in housing and also some mixed-use schemes. Now, that's mixed-use we want to talk about, Edwin, because that's going to be a big deal.
So I guess the focus for the exercise is, as I said, the three-story walk-ups, and I do a fair bit of work around the West and in Ashfield, in general, looking for clients. And now the my question to you as a potential buyer, I imagine you get is, okay, you've got all this nice Californian bungalows all around, you've got these older style cottages and terraces. Now, in terms of the heritage listing and the heritage envelopes, how will that affect the high-rise development?
Exactly. Well, it's very interesting because when you look closely, in and around the urban, the hub, I'm not sure that heritage listing means much. Further out, it'll still be there. But it is worth highlighting, I think, that, and as the report says here, you know, there's planning and infrastructure patterns continue to infill mixed use growth, but it's all very much in the near transport and corridors. Private developments will actually also be there. But interestingly, if you look at it, most of the recent planning and zoning, and we'll touch on the zoning in a moment, is close to those transport hubs. So further out, there's still some, low rise and old bungalows there. But closer in, it's completely different. Interestingly, did you notice that between 2016 and 21, population dropped, decline of about 3.5%. But I expect in the census in 2026, it will show there's been a huge boom in population growth, because if you look at it, we've got a strong concentration of 20 to 39-year-olds, a larger share of renters now, and there are some younger professional profiles there too, but the proportion of children aged 0 to 14 is lower than the New South Wales average, which again is in an urban apartment orientated profile. So I would say, Edwin, to answer your question indirectly, this is very much an area in absolute transition, right? And so there are still outlying areas where those old properties and those old protections exist, but they're being turned over in other areas, particularly close to the hubs. And that means, of course, that, if you're sitting in a property which is in close to the hub, you can probably sell it to a developer and they'll put a high-rise on it, Further out, there's going to be more interest in perhaps subdividing the low-rise properties. And some of the older style, the three-story, apartment blocks are probably ripe for development as well. So,
yes, 100%. You've hit the nail on the head, Martin. Yeah. That's you're spot on there. Mm-hmm. This is where quite a number of the older blocks, the smaller blocks, you'll find around Ashfield. As we're focusing on Ashfield, you'll find that there's quite a number of blocks around there that you'd see anywhere between 10 to 15, and even 18 apartments across a relatively big land envelope. I know the homes around them are heritage listed, but the land behind them isn't. So there is. I feel, as you've just said, and again, this is just you doing the research as though I'm a buyer. And I'm hitting you with information that I've already know. And quite frankly, this is the test. So far, Martin, you've been passing the test. So I commend you on that. And this is very important for people to understand. This is why you and I have been saying on the Monday Evening Property Rants that the smaller three-story walk-ups in many parts of Sydney are going to rise in value. And they are more favourable and potentially once Mintz really puts his foot down, these blocks will be converted into much higher developments of 20 stories plus. depending on how close they are to the railway station. So yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll go on with that, and I've got some more information on the high rise. Just to talk about the kids and education, because one of the other drivers of property prices is actually particular schools, and you know, there are still families, professional families, who want to get their kids in. And it's worth just noting that there are above average participations in tertiary study and higher levels of post school qualifications relative to many suburbs, but also demand for places in the schools is supported by the family households and also students drawn from neighbouring suburbs. And you've got St. Vincent's College, for example. You've got the Ashfield Public School, Ashfield High School, the St. Vincent's College with the new K-12 Catholic College amalgamation of three local Catholic schools operating from 2023, and other nearby non-government and specialist schools, several Catholic primary sites, and it's very interesting. Also, of course, there's the tertiary student catchment area and rental demand because of this connection to the connectivity there, and travel times from the University of Sydney and UTS is short by public transport and road, 6-7 Ks from the University of Sydney, and of course, frequent train and bus links. So high demand from students too. So you can see some of the dimensions. So the implications for rental demand is quite interesting. There's a combination of large young adult cohorts, good transit, you know, small unit stock rental, therefore early career renters, shared households as well, and proximity to tertiary institutions means it's very much there. So you've got a real interesting contention and different types of people looking at it. Now, what I did then was look at the zoning, because, of course, the zoning is what is meant to be the blueprint, right? And fascinatingly, of course, you know, you can find there are still the old style places still around there. This is quite close to the station. But if you look carefully at what's going on, it's a bit all in change. And if you walk down the road, you can start to see the 2 or 3 story buildings already there. Some of the old style as well, you know, as you said, on big blocks. This is actually a 3 story, I think, or maybe 4 story, but it's not very large in terms of what's on there. But look at the size of the plot. You know, that's ripe for ripe for improvement, quote unquote. And if you have a look at this, this is another, you know, go further away. Lots of low rise still there as well, further out. So again, it's very mixed, but this zoning is really important, right? There's a transport-orientated development, the TOD, and diverse and well-located homes initiative, that's the DWLH, the New South Wales Government programs, designed to, wait for it, rezone land near many rail and metro stations to increase housing supply. Broad template for outcomes that include higher allowable heights, so you're right on the multi-story, close to stations, a more permissive floor space, lot rules for medium-rise housing. And basically, you've got building envelopes up to about 21 meters around 6 stories, although we'll come to that 6 stories. That's only half the story, as we'll see in a second. The space ratio is around 3 to 0.1 in some places, reduced or no minimum lot size, and a staged gradient to lower heights out to the 400 to 800 meters from the station. So building around the hubs, basically. And this is actually, you know, you can't see much from here, but you can actually, if you look at particular areas, you can delve in. This is being updated at the moment, but you can see some of the different area zonings that they've actually got and how they're building it all around the station. And that means that, you know, we're going to get much more of this. This is one of the more modern ones, but you can see that it's actually, you know, a few stories high there. Or more of this. This is actually office accommodation, but around the corner, there's also some high-rise stuff too. And, you know, you can see that the whole thing is changing. So we're going from the old to the new, from the low to the high rise. And that means, of course, as it says here, that we're going to see councils committed to progressing local planning to deliver more homes while seeking, quote, guarantees for public housing investment as part of the negotiation. And that decision gave the council time to translate the objectives into the plans, et cetera, et cetera. And that basically means high high heights concentrated near the station and a zone further out. But look, this was quite interesting. This was actually on Facebook, I found. I'm concerned that the maps exhibited for the council's development plans are misleading. My analysis of the maps, including the interim map, do not make it clear that if a variety of council and municipal government initiatives are used, then the heights of what is shown in the map to six-storey buildings could in fact be more anything up to 16 storeys. And this is right. because you can go with six storeys to start with, so, and then you can add a couple more storeys up to four for council site amalgamated bonuses, any apartment sites, plus an additional two storeys allowing for New South Wales Government affordability housing bonus, any apartment types. That takes up to six or to nine or 12 storeys, and an additional one to store storeys for council public realm bonuses, and again, maybe on limited sites, but up to 16 storeys. So what this means is that the whole point of this is not six storeys as the max, right? This is going to be much, much higher, closer into the station, and a gradient out from that, Edwin. So this is a really big deal for this area.
Yeah, it is. And this is where, this is what I said earlier on, this is where you've got, yeah, you've got your standard 21-metre heights, but then we're pretty much clocking right up there to the 21 levels or 16 levels. It's all plus, plus, plus. So there's big changes proposed for Asheville. And as you pointed earlier on, Dusty and I are planning on having little kittens in the future. So, yeah, we're looking for schooling as well for the kittens.
Yeah, very, very good.
So there's a lot of schools there. And do you have anything on the religious halls there, or the places of worship? Does that have an influence? Have you got anything on that?
Yeah, I didn't specifically research that, but I can go back and do that. But clearly, it's quite mixed. There are a couple of mainstream churches as you'd expect, but there are other religions in the area too, and it's actually quite mixed. It links to the education, but also more broadly too.
Temples are coming up. Yep.
Correct. And I mentioned earlier on the mixed cultural norms and the different languages being spoken. So the implication there is you've got quite a complex mix of different types of people with different backgrounds and different religious needs.
The schools there are very important because you're surrounded by a lot of private schools, Presbyterian and Catholic, it's very much central to a lot of activity. And then you've got Ashbury, Croydon Park, as well. These other bigger lengths. And then you start going towards your Burwood as well, where you've got big, massive blocks of land. Where older style homes are sitting on massive blocks. I don't believe that will be touched unless something mysterious happens to them, like catch on fire, and then all of a sudden they can put a duplex up.
Oh, what a surprise. And just going back to the thing you mentioned earlier on, when you actually look here at the information here, it says heritage and local overlays. Council expected to knit state-level productive initiatives into Asheville's existing local environment plan, the LEP, and the development control plan, the DCP frameworks. So heritage conservation areas, local character streets, and key local constraints are explicitly considered in precinct maps and design guidance. Now, that's the theoretical statement. But you know and I know, Edwin, in practice, paper bags perhaps might even change hands, that isn't really worth the paper it's written on.
Then you've got, as I said, you can then pretty much do a boundary adjustment on a lot of these properties, and if you can buy the resection of the adjoining property, so you've got this high newer monstrosity right next to an old 1940s style cottage, so you're going to have a mixed bag of developments if they don't really control it. We know that it's all about the fees. It's all about the levies. It's all about the council contributions that dictate what's gonna happen. It's all about the fix. That's what our politicians at all levels call progress. And you and I aren't going to be able to change it, but we can just certainly give our proposed clients, in this case, we're putting this together for future clients and making this model or this program that you share with with your clients, extend that and share it with our clients as a strategic partner, because there's going to be a lot of overseas clients that Century 21 buyers, buyers, advocates, and agents that I'm heading are going to make use of, and they will want to know the more intricate detail that you're providing, as opposed to the just Googling everything, because it doesn't really get into the nuts and bolts where people really want to know. And even from the point of view of just from a temporary rental until they get themselves orientated before they go out and purchase, which is what again we've shared in the Monday Evening Property Rants, where we said that the Silent Tigers, a lot of them were just parked in many parts of Sydney for the last 6, 12, 18 months, just watching the landscape, watching how the demand of property, watching how things were being polarised to different areas. And because of schools, because of religious beliefs, places of worship, transport, and desirability. So all that is going to play a major part. So, and I think, Ashfield is going to very, very much on become a more of a hotspot moving forward. So a lot of also expats that are coming back. I know a couple of expats we've already bought for, an expat recently. And there's going to be others that are coming back that grew up in those areas that have moved abroad, 12 and 15 years ago. And they want to reconnect themselves to where they grew up, but by sharing this, they're going to be able to see how big a change has been made over the time that they've been abroad.
Yeah, well, I think the change story is a critical issue, Edwin. You know, this is an area, and there are so many others in and around our major urban centres. Are in absolute transition at the moment, and there are some consequences, right? So for developers, you can expect precinct-based controls that are more permissive, right? Whoopee, so they can build higher and build longer. They can reduce the footprint. They can reduce the land. They can reduce the light, all of those things, and all, of course, designed to, quote, improve housing affordability, although I'm a bit sceptical because the pricing on a lot of those new apartments are quite expensive. For residents and local groups, the controls create scope for some stronger local engagement, possibly, and maybe to protect sensitive heritage items, but I think only limited. And I actually think that the overriding wish to increase housing near the station is going to overwhelm everything else. And, of course, the rezoning in particular means that we're going to see greater capacity, medium density developments close to the transit, more traffic, of course, therefore concentrated growth, around Liverpool Road and places like that in other areas. But the point is, this is so different from what it used to be like. And so for many people, trying to figure out, do I want to live in this area? The question has to be, well, do you want to live in an area that is going underground so much transition? And, if you're buying a low-rise property, what's not to guarantee that next door or two doors up, they're suddenly going to put a six-story or more up, and it's happening.
This is what this is what AI can't tell you, is limited with a lot of things, and obviously where I'd say this is where you can get the fundamental information on the unit that you want to buy on, or the apartment that you want to buy, but you've got to go further and deeper than that. You literally, further and deeper, you've got to go into the common areas and into the basement parkings to see and understand the maintenance and what's happening and who's taking care of that. So obviously, we go back to you being a strategic partner moving forward in us sharing your insights with our clients. And they get a preemptive awareness of where they're looking at living, or maybe a relative or a friend's told them, hey, this is a great place, blah blah blah. But as you say, it's not necessarily what they were looking for. But this is the beginning of the conversation to really get people's give them a mental picture of where they're going to eventually park a lot of money. And because once they've made a decision, you're in there for for a while before you can change again. So, but there are certain things that obviously still left up to our side of that transaction to go out and investigate and to go look further, and then obviously there's the negotiation with the agent. But look, so far so good. So far you've got a H there, high distinction mark.
Very good. And I would say it's interesting. We haven't spoken yet about property prices, right? That was not the first topic, right? We'll come to that. Of course you will. But it's really, really important to set the context, right? What's happening in the area? What's the type of communities that are there? What are the type of plans? What are the planning zoning? All of those things, they're essential to understand before you actually get into the detailed discussion about how much property prices went over the last year or not, right? You've got to have a context. And that's what this deep dive is about. It's giving people the armory to be able to really understand the context before diving into, oh, I love that property, you know. So this is a very different way of thinking about it. And by the way, just on that, it's interesting. Did you notice this? There's a rally and march for, quote, better planning on Sunday, the 26th of October at Marrickville Town Hall. Dear Inner West residents, the unfairer future plan stage one passed council 8-7, but the campaign is not over. The target for more than 40,000 mostly expensive apartments will benefit no one except developers. It will involve demolition of existing communities and raising of backyards and tree canopy and without any new green open space. The Inner West is already the fourth densest area in the state, and it's the second lowest amount of open space per resident. Just give you a flavour of the feeling that's there, Edwin. And you know, not surprisingly, there are people saying, "Hang on a moment, this ain't right."
Yeah, this is and again, this is what a lot of people that want to move in, and then necessarily, you've got your make rash decisions. Look from property purchasing property, as I say to a lot of my clients, our clients, is that it's often the case that we've got to tell it the way it is. In other words, we don't put filters on the information that we give a lot of our clients, because there are certain areas that demographically, they've changed, and values have gone up. And there are other areas of Sydney that demographically they've changed and values have gone down, and there've been cycles. Like I said, in Blacktown, I love Blacktown because over the last 35 years that I've been involved with property in one way or another, I've seen and beyond when my family moved out there in the subdivisions in Kings Park and even Kings Langley, and around about those areas there, you saw the demographic changes and how different cultures, how they influence the market over 30 years. It's spectacular, and I can that film plays in my mind over and over again, and as you say, and this is what the your drilling into an area and looking at it with a with a large microscope and going very granular, gives people that better understanding than what they see, and also, as I say, and this is before we get to the price, right? And this is where people now, obviously, then the information that you're producing is going to make people realize, hey, shit, yeah, well, that's the way it demands these type of values, or hey, hold on a minute, why am I paying so much for this area if this is, this is going left field, which is very important, which is where unfortunately we're adopting the methodology to buy property with looking at property with less emotion. Obviously, we can't take away all the emotion, but we can certainly look at it in this way methodically, as opposed to going in there boots and all in emotion and just attend the auction and sign a contract on the day before you know it, where you don't even realize that you've paid well over the odds because of emotion.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, a lot of people don't do the homework beforehand. And, I have one-to-one conversations all the time with people, and I give them all this information and their jaw drops. Oh, we never thought about that. Oh, we never. Oh, gosh. Okay. Yeah, now I get to understand a bit more of the dynamics. The other thing I always look at, Edwin, is the crime, flood, and fire risks. And of course, it varies. If you're looking, in the middle of the city, it's different. But just so that Ashfield is in the inner suburban area, so it's got a relatively low level of suburb risk. Although, of course, you've still got stormwater infrastructure, and the flood hazards are more likely to be surface water, flash flooding. Of course, if you've got basements being built out, that creates an interesting challenge as well. So, are they putting enough drainage in the basements? Good question. Particularly where if you're close to mapped water courses or low points or constructed drainage
Like, sorry,
channels.
sorry, David, Martin, let me interrupt. Like Frederick Street in the highway, that low lane area, and you've got basement car parks in a couple of the buildings there.
Yes, absolutely
Yeah,
right.
that's it, 100%.
Yeah, and again, a lot of people who are buying in high rise don't think about looking at the basements, but they should. In terms of the urban footprint with regard to fire, well, it's not really on the urban fringe. It's not really in the peri-urban area, so really not really that exposed to bushfire-prone areas. But of course, you might have local vegetation or conditions that warrant a bit more detail. And in terms of crime, the crime is quite interesting insofar that the rates for Ashfield shows a moderate level of reported offences. It's roughly 1,400 to 1,500 recorded incidents in the 12-month period, and that's per 1,000. Interestingly, not massive, but it's worth thinking about. The largest offence categories were theft, property deception offences, and also justice procedures like breaches and assaults. But some notable counts appear for stalking, harassment, property damage, and some drug-related offences. And the trends also highlighted the fact that year-to-year variations were a little bit up in some areas. Aggregate annual totals, 1,500 in the suburbs. So look, not dramatic, but worth just thinking about, right? So in some of those areas, we are going to see higher on-street crime as well as actually property crime. So that's just worth thinking about. And again, I don't want to frighten people, Edwin, but I always want to give people as much information to be able to weigh this up. Because if I were buying in an area, I would want to know what are the flood risks, what are the fire risks, what are the crime rates, because they are things that can affect the values of property significantly.
When you're looking at the Asheville area, and you're looking at the high concentration of people in students, as you say, and we're also looking somewhat, we're not too far from New York, from Canterbury as well, where you've got a high concentration of your little brothers and little sister workers, in the construction industry, and they also filter into Asheville because of the Asian cuisines that you can find there. So you've got a high concentration of people in smaller dwellings and in your budget accommodation. So your crime rate is going to go up in terms of, as you said, the petty theft, petty crime. That's going to skew the numbers a little bit because guess what, folks? A lot of these apartments, in many cases, don't have that don't have garages. Even a lot of the older style apartments may have a carport or the actual block of units built on top of the first level being an open level where like where the cars just basically fit in, so it's an open area. So this is where the theft comes is it rises, and you got your petty crime, and because it's easy to go around and stealing goods because people don't. Can't put all that stuff in a 2-bedroom apartment. That's basically 58 to 62 square meters internal, including the balconies. So there's only so much that you can store there. So storage is a major problem, and so that spalls out into the carports, open garage areas, and this is where you've got the high rise in crunch because it's easy to pinch a bike, pinch whatever, and you've got those issues. So yeah, again, that's something very, very important that people need to be aware of, that if you need a lot of space, well, you might need to look a little bit further afield.
Yeah, and the security is important for many people, of course. Now, when it comes to property demand and supply, Edwin, how many estate agencies are active in Ashfield?
I would say state agencies in Asheville, I would say that there's probably about 15 to 17 offices. I haven't read your document, but
Yeah.
just from historical knowledge, there's about would be about 15 to 17.
So according to the research I've done, there are about 172 real estate agents active from those agencies. So 172 people, right?
Which are, well, on average, yeah, there are bigger offices there and there's smaller offices. There are a lot of independents there as well. And they'll operate. So yeah, that would be fair. So I would say offices are around the 15 to 17. Obviously, there'll be offices registered where they'll be working from the office building blocks. They'll be attached to accountancy firms and the like. But yeah, I wouldn't put past it. It's not as big as Parramatta, but it's close because of the ethnic influence and the ethnic the diversity in the ethnicity. So you've got a lot of various groups and various agencies there operating. And as I said, and they marry up with accountants, slash financial planners, slash mortgage brokers, slash lawyers.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's just look through at the property demand. So the strong, solid transaction activity for units, particularly, there's a constrained rental yield for houses and stronger yields for units and ongoing interest from buyers looking at the days on market and buyer interest metrics. And as I said, 172 real estate agents active in the Ashfield area from a number of different agencies. The local market shows a substantial number of unit transactions and new unit listings the past 12 months. That's, of course, the ongoing shift towards higher density supply. And the median house prices are in the multi-million dollar range, while median unit prices are in the high six figures. And here is a couple of examples. We'll look at that in a bit more detail. 2.2 million, give or take, for houses median and units, maybe 850 to 870,000, depending on the source and the 12-month period. And there's quite a lot of market tightness. There were dozens of house sales, around 76 to 88 houses sold, depending on the data set you look at, and several hundred unit sales, somewhere between 295 and 325 unit sales reported, with median days on market between the high 30s and mid 40s for units and slightly higher for houses. So there's steady buyer interest and relatively active turnover. And looking at the buyer interest demands and the clearance and auctions rates, there's some competition for the smaller apartments. The rental yields reported are low for houses, and we'll look at those in a bit more detail, but slightly higher for units. And there's a question, of course, of the relationship between the capital values and the stronger investor returns on units. And looking at the supply, recent unit sales and large pool of units listed compared with houses, just the supply response has been concentrated in the apartment developments, producing a market where unit supply and turnover are materially higher than the detached housing. So detached housing, if you've got a detached house there, if you want to buy, you're probably going to buy at a premium because of the lack of supply. On the unit side, not so much. A lot of units coming on, but of course, a lot of the demand as well. Here is the price trend. So this is actually for houses over the last 10 years. So the median in September 2016 was 1.42 million. It went up in 2017, down in 2018, down in 2019, up in 2020, massive up, well above 20% in 2021, down in 2022, and then up in 23 by around 5%, 24 by slightly more, and 25 by just under 10%. So the median today for houses, 2.4 million, with some variation, as we'll see shortly. So that's the price trend there. And looking at units, because the 10-year trend's quite interesting just in seeing how things pan out. So the median unit back in 2016 was $650,000. Massive rise in 2017, significant falls in 18 and 19, rises in 20 and 21. That was the COVID effect. A fall in 2022, but rises in 23. 24 was well above 10%, and 25, well, some rise, but not quite as strong. Median, 892,000, according to my analysis. So that gives you a bit of a trend there. And looking at the what's on market, there's a lot of new stock on market at the moment. So under 30 days in the blue, there's a bit of a hangover of over 180 days. So there are still some lemons here, Edwin, as well. In other words, thing that's hanging around and nobody wants to buy. But there's a big flow of relatively new property. And if you look at the mix there, you can see it's mostly units. So this is the blue is light blues units. The dark blue is houses. So it's three or four times the number of units than houses. So that gives you a bit of a flavour. And now if I look at my data set, this is now the DFA data set for the postcode. And we can see there's more than 10,000 households here in the postcode. Around 23% own outright, 24% borrow, 52% rent. You can see that there's a level of mortgage stress, rental stress, and investor stress, which cumulatively is putting quite a lot of pressure on households. And that's one of the things I want to highlight in terms of prospective future price rises. Is this going to be a dampener? Well, maybe it will, maybe it won't. In terms of property mix, 22% of houses, 69% of units, small number of other types, including things living over retail and that sort of thing. There was a high vacancy rate when the census was done in 2021, but that may be to do with COVID and lack of students. The vacancy rate's quite a lot lower now. Gross rental investment, this is the comparison between the theoretical total rental return that you might get compared with the price if you wanted to buy a new property. And on average, it's about 3.3%, which is not flash, which is what we saw earlier on. And as we said also, returns on gross investment returns on houses are much lower than on units. But the net investment yield, that's the cash flow, money in, money out. What rents am I getting? What am I having to pay out? Is negative. So on the cash flow basis, people are losing money. Now, of course, in recent times, they've done very well with property price rises. So if you've been a property investor and you bought at the right time, you'll be sitting on capital appreciation. Ahead, and this is my sensitivity analysis based on my three scenarios, are we going to get more rate cuts or not? Or are we going to get a recession or not? Just a bit sensitivity. But because of this high stress level, I've got a sense that we may be a little bit more constrained in terms of future growth. But the point there, Edwin, is if we get significant demand from outside, as we said, and if we get this big change in the property mix, there's still potential upside in some areas. But I'm not sure it's as baked in as we've seen over the last couple of years.
No, because of the cost and also the Ashfield is changing, and what's happening with Ashfield, and also liken it to a lot of other properties around Sydney. Harris Park is another one where people have flocked to because of the just on the outskirts of Parramatta, and then you've got when you start comparing apartments in Harris Park to apartments closer into Parramatta, they say, well, yeah, they're as cheap as chips, and people jumping in. But one of the things that you find with a lot of these yellow brick, red brick apartment complexes that were built in the in the 60s and early 70s is that they've come up to the use by date, and to trying to renovate the bloody things is costly, and you don't have lifts, and you've got you've got the extra pressures of labor costs to get rid of waste, and strata companies are, because of the screws that they've been tightening across the stratosphere, it's become very, very hard, very costly to renovate. So a lot of these properties. So in terms, and this is where like a sort of adding on to what you were saying earlier on, that you've got the greater complexities to understand, whether or not or how much more a lot of these older complexes go up in value, how vastly different in price are going to be the new ones that are going to be delivered, and when are they going to be delivered, and what's happening in the meantime. So I think what's keeping the Ashfield property market afloat is not your investors anymore; it's your first home buyers, and that want to live in the inner west, on the outskirts of the inner west, and want to avail themselves of the infrastructure that is there. And this is what's keeping them afloat. But outside of that, nothing else really makes sense, because you saw what happened there for the apartments when during the lockdowns. Well, the pricing, the median went down, and went down rapidly. What I feel, perhaps 5-7 years down the track, when we do see more high rise coming to finish, we might see a bit of a change. But it also comes back to what the migration policies are going to be like as well. Mm. But right now, what's keeping a lot of these this area and many parts of the Asheville market buoyant are your first home buyers in the apartment world.
Absolutely. Well, just looking at the details here, 56 properties for sale currently in Ashfield. Here's a map showing roughly their distribution. You can see a lot around the centre there, and some of the outer suburban areas as well. If you start looking at it, it's quite interesting. So this is actually just looking listed by, newly listed. So you can see here, there's an apartment for 859,000 there, with a couple of bedrooms, an auction of apartments. I'm surprised how many actually apartments are going to auction, Edwin. That's quite interesting. And you can see some of the older style ones there. You can see here's a house with six bedrooms and three bathrooms going to auction. Interestingly, here's one which was added very recently. Apartment. And as we go down the list, you can see there's a lot of auctions. And, you and I have spoken before, Edwin, and I want to highlight again, it doesn't make often a lot of sense to actually compete at auctions for these types of properties, particularly some of the apartments, because, emotion will get in the way. But it is fascinating going down the list, as we could do. Some of the older style ones there, added 14 hours ago. Well, that was when I took the snapshot. One bed, one bath apartment there. And some of the new ones. And here's an example. Highlighting the whole area. You can pretty much bet your bottom dollar that's ripe for redevelopment there.
One of the things, as I said, that you've got to be very careful with a lot of the auctions in the inner west and in other parts, other markets of Sydney, where you find that there's a cluster of the older style apartments. Do your numbers, and they may look cleaned up, spruced up, and don't cut corners by not engaging your own independent building inspector to tell you straight up, hey, your bathroom needs to be. It needs to be updated. It's got a leak, because a lot of the case, bathroom renovation, in many of these are not covered by the failure of the waterproofing from 1972, right? Yeah. So, you've got all these issues that you're going to inherit, and as I've said, let's say on average, a bathroom renovation. On average in a home, this is average, this is just, I'm just talking averages, is around about $30,000 to $35,000, just the standard bathroom renovation. But in an apartment, it costs you up to $50,000, and the bloody thing's half the size. Why? Mm-hmm. Because you're employing more manual labor to cut the good. There's a lot more that can go wrong, a lot more that has to be that you have to, a lot more hurdles that you have to go cross over as in a bathroom renovation, because you've got to maintain the common areas. So all these things add up. So when people get all emotional, but this is why the selling agents in these areas, where they get a lot of Now the first home buyer competition and what the 5% deposit 5% deposit scheme ended up doing is fueling this. And in order to get in, they are bypassing due diligence, which is crazy. So this is why they love this apartments in this in the Ashfield area, the very strong Ashfield Summerhill, and also a bit further up the road on that from Ashfield, you've got the because of what's fueling it, and take away the student population, and it's a different story, right?
Well, of course, that's what happened. COVID, wasn't it? That's why there was such a high vacancy rate. Just a couple more to highlight here. This is actually, 2.6 million for a standalone four-bedroomed house, probably on a reasonable size plot there, and attracting a bit of interest. I was quite amused by this one. When you actually have a view from the balcony as the shot of the property, you can imagine that it looks pretty ugly from the outside, probably. And you can see here that, that a townhouse at 1.5 million plus, an apartment here at about 600,000. Again, one bed, one bath, one car. And so it goes on. I'm not going to go through all of them, but the point is that you can see big variations, right? Here's unit 503 on 380 Liverpool Road. So that's going to be one of the taller ones. And I don't know which floor it's on. And some of the older style ones here as well. And going down this list, it really does give you a bit of a flavor. Oversized one bedroom apartment, 700,000, give or take. Or here's one, 2 years free strata levies. Well, that's a very interesting little challenge there. So you can that's a real quote incentive unquote. So and here's another high rise. Oh, it's the same one probably twice actually. So it goes on, and so we go down the list, and you get a real good flavor of just what's around. And I think that's one of the best things to do. Again, just looking at prices, styles, what's available, it's a really powerful thing. Now, if we then move to what's sold, in the last 8 weeks, 47 properties sold. And it's very interesting that most of those properties were right close to the Ashfield center of gravity there, as you're perhaps not surprised. Again, interesting auctions. Over $1 million here for a three-bedroomed apartment, sold by auction here, didn't quote the price. 2 million plus a house here, auction just over $1 million, an apartment 830,000, auction 1.68 million, couple of different price ones. So you get a little bit. Now, these are unreliable indicators because they don't always update all of the data. In some cases, they suppress the data, but it gives you a bit of flavor of what's going on. And you can see here that there's quite a flood of apartments selling. And as we said, a lot of first-time buyers are actually active in the market. Some of the older style houses as well are also selling. And so it goes on. So that gives you a bit of a flavor of what's happened recently. And it is just, I think, very educational to just go through and have a look at what's around and what has been on the market and what has sold and what hasn't. A lot of last asking prices, Edwin, and of course, you know, and I know last asking price is nothing to do necessarily with the actual sale price that was actually agreed, because in some cases, the sale price could be lower than the last asking price. But of course, there is the definitive information. I always include this when I can. So this is the sales data from the New South Wales Registry, and this is actually the purchase price data once the property is settled. And you can go down the list here. I've just did a quick search for recent sales, and you can see here the sort of the indicative purchase prices. A lot of units you can see here showing in the listing here, but prices above 2.5 million for houses, units in the sevens, eights, nines, some a bit lower, some 645. And you can also see sometimes this, the same address popping up again and again and again because multiple properties are in the same unit block and they're all for sale. And you can get that on the land registry. There's a link there. I always include the link for people. They can do their own queries. So, as I come to the end of my sort of one-to-one conversation, I think I'd highlight, Edwin, the transitional nature of the area, the risks from the new development and the implications of that for the changed nature of what's going on, the very strong contention with first-time buyers and the units that are coming through, some of the older style properties that are still there at the moment but potentially at risk from redevelopment, and the question of the trajectory of home prices ahead given this massive transition makes it a little bit uncertain. However, if you are thinking of wanting to benefit from the potential upside, then finding an older style, three-story place or whatever on a bigger plot could give you upside if you had the appetite to do that. But of course, bear in mind, if you buy a modern apartment, the strata fees, which are already astronomical, will rise dramatically over the next few years. That isn't something that many people are thinking about when they go and buy. And if you're buying an older style property, you need to make sure you understand the planning implications of what's happening around you, because it may well be that the in conditions that you've got at the moment won't be the same in 2 or 3 years' time. And if you had a couple of big high rises being built, the value of that property might well go down simply because it's now being overshadowed and overlooked. So it's absolutely essential to make sure you understand the planning context for any decisions that you make, particularly in Ashfield. There we are, Edwin. What do you think?
And this is, look, that's great. That's great, because then you add on to that, to those costs, you add on the fire ordinances that all the properties will have to bring up to speed. Then, as we spoke over a year ago, in relation to upgrading the wiring, the main boxes, and then and how many more substations are you going to see down the road in order to cope? So you've got to, because a lot of the people are moving away from the older stoves and putting in the induction stoves that pull in 32-33 amps, and that's the allotment of amperage to your unit in that complex. From the main box, because of otherwise you have to upgrade one block in particular in Nashville that we know of, where we've done a bit of work there, and we originally helped one of our clients buy there, and now they're upgrading the whole system, and we've been helping them with that whole thing. So you're talking over $100,000 to upgrade the main box, and then every unit has to look at upgrading their internal boxes as well, electrical boxes, the mains, and then then on top of that, you also got I think these funny things called windows that a lot of them have got the timber frames that are absolutely cactus, and then start trying to replace and put scaffold all around the building in order to to replace those windows. A lot of the aluminium windows are a lot easier to manage because you can actually do them from inside. Whereas a lot of these apartment complexes where you've got the older style timber frame windows. So the list goes on. So this is where that awareness comes about. And this is why people, obviously our role is to protect our clients as well, and not to get try to control their emotion when we're looking at buying for first-time buyers, as well as downsizers or whoever it is that that engages us. But I think what you're showing there, as I said, is we'll add another layer of information for our clients, Martin, which is great, because it's a preliminary look at areas that they may want to suggest or may think, or more to the point, where the relative or friend is recommended to them that they should buy.
Right, so the conversation over the barbecue, right? That's where it normally starts. Yeah, well,
over the barbecue overseas.
Yeah, and the whole point here is it's part of the matrix of providing information to help people make better decisions. That's what this is about, right? And I'm not trying to dissuade people. I'm not trying to persuade people to buy or not buy. I'm trying to just present the evidence in a way that's hopefully balanced, but also important. I've done this, so many times now for so many people. And the feedback I always get is, wow, there's much more to think about than I thought there was to think about, which is exactly right. But there's also a way through here. You know, you can begin to prioritize some of these different issues and make sure you actually are buying on the right basis rather than actually emotion. I will just say, for those who are interested, if you are wanting a one-to-one conversation, the one-to-one service we're talking about here is available and it's quite popular at the moment. This is the chance to have an individual conversation with me about a particular suburb or postcode. I can look at the stress data and the price trends and all the other stuff based on my modeling, but I can't give financial advice. But it does give you a bit of a sense down at a particular suburb level what is actually going on. And it's typically an hour's conversation, just as we've had today, either via Zoom or phone. And if you are interested, you can contact me via my blog. The bookings are about 3 to 5 weeks out at the moment, simply because we are so busy, but it's proved to be a very popular service. So if you're interested in having a one-to-one conversation about a particular suburb across Australia, then contact me via the DFA blog. And I guess, Edwin, if you know, we're going to play with this in the context of what you're doing, probably people can talk with you and we can do something that way too. So the point is, this is an extra set of tools that in the current climate, I think are absolutely essential. And so that's not surprising. I'm getting a lot of demand at the moment. And hopefully we've demonstrated the value of that today, Edwin.
I'm saying I think so as well. I think so, and you've certainly, touched on points that many people don't aren't aware of. Obviously, we make them aware of it, like you do. So we're on the same path. And as you said earlier on, it's all about giving as much information and putting, empowering people with information and knowledge before they go out there and burn their money, and get all emotional. That is the key. It's emotion that drives a lot of these auctions. I mean, we just sort of participated in an auction during the week with one of our clients over in the Northern Beaches, and we took the wind out of the sail of the agents by basically withdrawing the day before, and because we knew that we were being they were trying to play us and knock the wind out, and now we're more or less the vendors are prepared to accept less than what we would have been prepared to pay on the day, but we're still negotiating down. So yeah, there you go. So that's what happens with emotion. If you let emotion drive you, and if you put two participants in the room, and in a lot of these cases where the auctions are held inside, it makes it even more spectacular when you've got. Six groups of people participating, in an auction in a 2-bedroom apartment in the West, it looks even more dramatic, and it's everything sort of seems to be amplified 10 times, 10-fold, and things go crazy. And then there are the mysterious NCBs and dummy bidders that come and go. So all these adds and fuels, and the unfortunate thing is it. It masks the real issues that people should be looking at. So, this is the first time I've seen one of these reports, Martin, and I think it's fabulous. And I'm sure that our clients are certainly going to, I'm going to be persuading them to avail themselves of a report if they're looking at a specific area, and more or less visit you first before they come. Then we take them by the hand and walk them through the actual properties themselves.
Well, I think it works really well because, I can do some of that upfront work and help them to be informed, but then actually you can lead them along the path and help them to, transact successfully and get the solution that they want. But I can only underscore one thing as we close out here. Getting armed yourself with this information is much, much more powerful than just either Googling, because Google doesn't give you all the information, or indeed relying on what the agent says. Because the agent is only interested in getting a sale at any price, at any cost. They don't actually tell the full story. And quite often what I find is that people who've gone through the one-to-one conversation have a toolkit of questions that they can then work with as they negotiate and as they deal with the agents. And it just gives them a a much stronger position to be able to have the right conversation and, in fact, even negotiate harder because they're actually better informed about the property and the location. And that, of course, is very important rather than just emotion. Edwin, really appreciated your time today. Very good. We'll look forward to the rant next Monday. And I hope people found this really helpful.
Well, I'm sure they will, Martin. And thank you very much for your time.
Okay. See you soon. Bye-bye.